This is Jim Engster coming today on the show. Our guests will include Southern University Law Professor Angela Allen Bell. Professor Bell will be in studio to discuss some things that are happening regarding the Southern University Law Center, and in particular, a project involving those who are exonerated and what happens to them after they've served time that they did not deserve. Also on the show, Roy King, the LSU band leader, fresh off a 23-21 victory over South Carolina Saturday night, the number 3 Gamecocks losing to the Tigers. LSU is preparing for Tigerama, and Roy King will talk about what's going on with the world-famous LSU band. And Nancy Jo Craig and former LSU basketball star Nikita Wilson on an interesting endeavor in this community. But first, the news. This is Jim Engster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. Kevin Gallagher is producing. 297-5633 is your number. Outside the area, it's 877-217-5757. You may reach us via email at engstershow@wrkf.org. We begin with Professor Angela Allen Bell from Southern University's Law Center. She is here to discuss a few things, including the speaker series. Some major lectures will be presented this week at Southern University, and one of those speaking is a gentleman named John Thompson. He's a prison exoneree who's toured the country after the U.S. Supreme Court reversed his multimillion-dollar judgment against the Orleans Parish DA's office. And Thompson is founder and executive director of Resurrection After Exoneration. Good morning, Professor Bell.
Good morning.
This is something that has become more pertinent with many inmates across the land and some in Louisiana who have been vindicated through DNA evidence. How substantial is the endeavor that Mr. Thompson is engaging in?
Well, John Thompson is actually touring the country with Barry Shegg to bring awareness about the issues of prosecutorial misconduct. This is one of his first speaking engagements actually in South Louisiana, but he's toured all over the country speaking at many of the Ivy League law schools. This is going to be his life's work, so this is a very expansive effort on his part.
Professor Bell has followed many cases, and most recently there was a gentleman, 38-year-old Damon Thibodeau, wrongly convicted of raping and killing his 14-year-old step-cousin in 1997. He was released a few weeks ago from Louisiana's death row after his confession was determined to be false and DNA tests found him to be innocent. Now, where is Mr. Thibodeau?
Mr. Thibodeau immediately left the state of Louisiana with the $10 check that he was issued upon release, and he has been returned out of state to his family.
So they get 10 bucks when they leave?
$10 is it, and a bus ticket.
Well, he served how long for a crime he did not commit? 15 years.
Yes, 15 years.
On death row.
On death row, which actually means that that was all in solitary confinement.
So 15 years on death row. He's 38. That means he went in at 23. Those are some prime years for people. And he was facing a death sentence to boot. I would imagine that would be a bit harrowing.
Oh, absolutely. And what's interesting about these exonerees is that many of them, because of the years that they spend trying to prove their innocence upon release, there is no family left in most cases. So Mr. Thibodeau's case is unique in that there was family to return to, but often they leave the prisons to go into the homeless population because there are no family members left and there are no resources in society to embrace them.
297-5633 is your number. Now, before DNA, people were probably killed at times for crimes they did not commit. That's a sobering thought.
Yes, it absolutely is. And on that issue, there is a joint project that's extremely noteworthy that is between the Michigan Law School and the Northwestern Law School. And what they've done is they've created a national registry of exonerations, and that dates from 1989 to the present. They have a really, really good website that shows, enumerates every state and how many exonerations have happened in those years. Louisiana is, for states its size, one one of the highest number of wrongful convictions. We have now 35, including Mr. Damon Thibodeau. So this effort needs to be brought to the public's attention because this is a very widespread problem. It's not just happening in Louisiana. It's happening all over the country. And these mistakes often are not accidental. Many times these are willful, intentional acts of misconduct on the part of prosecutors, and rarely are they held accountable for their actions.
The 35 cases in Louisiana in which people have been proved innocent through DNA evidence, did those all involve rape and murder?
Some of them involved withholding of evidence. Some of them involved false confessions, as in the case of Mr. Thibodeau. Almost all of those cases were capital murder cases, which means that the state of Louisiana would have on its conscience the deaths of 35 people who were actually innocent.
Well, Thompson has toured the country. John Thompson has, with Barry Scheck, the co-founder of the Innocence Project. It was founded in 1992 to assist prisoners who could be proved innocent through DNA testing. And for those who would like to hear Mr. Thompson, he will be featured at the Southern Law Center this Wednesday, as 2 days from now. He'll be talking at what time?
At 12 noon at the Law Center, and the event is free and open to the public. And then again at 5 o'clock on the very same afternoon, Mr. Thompson brings his production called Voices of Innocence, where himself as well as maybe six other exonerees will do excerpts of their emotional reactions to their exonerations. And that tour, it's an original production, and it's actually been featured last month on the O Network.
Well, you noted Mr. Thibodeau, who received $10 after being in jail for 15 years on death row for a crime that he did not commit. How do these people adjust to that kind of experience?
Well, Mr. Thibodeau's is the exception again because he has family and because he's left the state of Louisiana. If they remain in Louisiana, we are unlike many states because we do not have an automatic exoneration statute. So in the state of Louisiana, when someone is exonerated, of course, in many of these cases, like Michael Anthony Williams, who lives in Baton Rouge, he was brought to prison at the age of 16, exits at the age of 45. Same with Sharif Cousins. These are young children entering adult institutions, and they're impacted in multiple different ways. So when they are released in the state of Louisiana, the first battle that they must fight is, how do I sustain myself? Because there is no automatic exoneration statute. So the process in this state is very complicated because they actually petition the courts, asking the courts to acknowledge that they are entitled to the exoneration fund. At that point, they have to go over to the legislature and ask for a particular representative to sponsor a bill so that they could be funded. And then they have to wait in line behind all of the other allocations for the state, schools, medicals, and then they are funded. And when they are funded, it is a cap of $25,000 for the year, and oftentimes they have to pay lawyers to represent them through the process, and the legal fees are generally about a fourth of the $25,000 a year.
Our guest for a few more minutes is Angela Allen Bell, professor of law at Southern University, and she was on this program several months ago discussing the status of the Angola 3. What's going on in that case?
The Angola 3 case involves two cases that are separately being handled through the federal courts. The first case involving Albert Woodfox was brought to hearing in May in the federal court, and we're awaiting a ruling on Albert Woodfox's case. The stakes are actually really high because this could ultimately free Mr. Woodfox. This is his third time around being tried on these same charges, and similar to the things that we're talking about today, there is issues of prosecutorial misconduct in the Angola 3 case as well, and that was the basis for him being given the second trial, because you had a case where prosecutors were using certain incentives to get witnesses to testify, and when they were asked to disclose that, of course, they took the position that they wouldn't be truthful. And years later, when it was discovered, that was the basis for the trial being him being given a new trial.
Well, for those unfamiliar, the three men were taken out of the general prison population at Angola. They were held in solitary confinement after the murder of a prison guard in 1972. 23-year-old prison guard Brent Miller was killed. And the three remained in solitary confinement for how long?
40 years as of April of this year. Of course, Mr. King is now free. He was released in 2001. And he just last week was actually awarded an honorary law degree in London.
So what is the status of the others?
Mr. King, again, is free. Albert Woodfox, we're waiting on the ruling. And Herman Wallace, then trial proceeds after Albert Woodfox's ruling.
Now, they were moved after 36 years from solitary to a maximum security dormitory. But that kind of experience over 30 years in solitary confinement has to be something that is difficult to withstand.
That is correct. They were moved, but what's important about the move is that the conditions have not changed. So at these new facilities, they're still being held in solitary confinement, and the conditions are really extreme. For 23 hours a day, they remain in their cells. For 1 hour a day, weather permitting, they're released to go outside to exercise in what is the equivalent of a cage, and they are not permitted to engage in any activities in the prison, not allowed to attend school, church, or interact with others. And the thing that's important about this is that these gentlemen are 65 years old and 70 years old. And so there's a questionable conversation that needs to be had about whether they are actually security threats at this moment in time, if they ever were.
Now, Barry Scheck, the guy who's ahead of this Innocence Project, he's best known for being one of O.J. Simpson's lawyers. He was involved in this endeavor before he became an attorney for O.J., but how instrumental has he been in this quest to free these people who have been wrongly convicted?
Barry Scheck is almost a lone soldier in this march. He has been the force that has brought this issue to the forefront. It was sort of a dirty secret that we kept hidden until Barry Scheck came along and exposed the fact that this is happening in many jurisdictions. And again, not always because we have prosecutors who made a mistake. Many, many times this is over intentional acts of misconduct. And Barry Scheck has devoted his life to this work. And of course, this is a population of people who don't have resources to pay. So much of what they do, they're not going to ever be compensated for the hours of labor that goes into and years of labor that goes into ultimately seeking someone's release once they've been wrongfully convicted.
Well, in the case of Mr. Thibodeau, a listener wants to know about civil action. I would think he would probably be filing suit against the great state of Louisiana.
Well, that might have been something he would have considered prior to John Thompson. But John Thompson took the action that you just mentioned, which is to sue the state of Louisiana, or actually sue the district attorney's office in New Orleans. John Thompson's case has set a precedent because the Supreme Court reversed the courts of Louisiana. So the trial court, the appellate courts in Louisiana agreed with John Thompson that he was wronged and he was due $14 million. The United States Supreme Court, Clarence Thomas writing the opinion, actually reversed the state courts in Louisiana, found in favor of the Orleans Parish District Attorneys, and gave John Thompson zero. So what's important about that is two things. Prosecutors have immunity for their official acts when they prosecute, and so they're insulated from civil liability on that premise. The second concept is that oftentimes you may think to sue the jurisdiction since you can't sue the individual, which is what John Thompson did unsuccessfully. So as a result of the Thompson v. Connick case, the message now to these exonerees is that you cannot sue prosecutors because they're immune, and you can't prevail against jurisdiction due to this opinion that was authored by Justice Clarence
Thomas.
All right,
so that affects everybody.
That's absolutely correct.
So when you say Mr. Thibodeau got $10 after 15 years in prison, that's $10.
That's absolutely correct. That's absolutely correct. And in that opinion that the Connick opinion that was written, there's an interesting dissent by Justice Ginsburg, Justice Breyer, Justice Sotomayor, and Justice Kagan, all of them concurring that there is a corrupt practice in the district attorney's office in New Orleans and that this was not an accident. This was actually a case of rogue prosecutors who were being protected by the district attorney. And so they wrote separately to dissent that this was such an egregious case of misconduct that they certainly felt that John Thompson was entitled to the $14 million judgment.
297-5633 or 877-217-5757, inkstershow@wrkf.org. We'll be back to spend a few more minutes with Angela Allen Bell, professor of law at Southern University, and Southern is preparing for an event this Wednesday as part of its speaker series in which John Thompson will appear. We'll be back after this one-minute timeout. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. Professor of Law at Southern University, Angela Allen Bell, is with us for a bit longer. 877-217-5757, wherever you may be. Bruce in Walden. Bruce, good morning. You're on with Professor Bell.
Yes, good morning. With Michelle Washington's new Jim Crow in mind, I was wondering what the racial pattern is among these convictions.
They're very consistent with what she exposes in her book, mostly going to be cases where you have white prosecutors guilty of using misconduct on African-American men. And, of course, the profile would be men between the ages of 16 and 23.
All right. Did she answer your question, Bruce? All right. I think we lost Bruce. Now, this is an event, as we noted, that will be at the Southern University Law Center Wednesday, and at noon, Mr. John Thompson will appear. There are some other activities as well.
Yes, at 5 o'clock, there is a production where John Thompson, along with several other exonerees, will tell their individual stories, and it's from 5 to 6 p.m. at the Law Center, and it is also free and open to the public.
All right. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it. Professor Angela Allen Bell from Southern University, and I think you had one more thing you wanted to impart.
Yes, one final thought. In the state of Louisiana, the reason this has continued is because there has been no accountability. So in the case of a police officer or a fireman or a doctor, when they engage in misconduct, they are held accountable. But in the state of Louisiana, none of these prosecutors that are involved in these 35 wrongful convictions have yet been held accountable. And that is something that we need to address as a state.
Randy and Zachary. Hi, Randy. You're on the air.
Case that you were speaking at, Justice Thomas wrote the opinion reversing the decision about the one, this young man, just the $10. Can you please tell us what was the vote of the court when it came to that decision? And also let people know that this could happen to anyone that's inside of Louisiana prison.
Yes, that's correct. It was a 5-4 vote, and the issue there was, can you hold a municipality liable for the wrongful actions of the prosecutors in the municipality? And what the Supreme Court says, of course, is that in this case, there was no proof that there was a practice of not training prosecutors, and as a result, there was no liability for the municipality. And yes, this happens to many, many people because they're voiceless, they have no resources to be able to launch a campaign to expose this. And the other problem is the actual wrongfully convicted person bears the burden of having to prove their innocence, which is very difficult to do when you're on death row in isolation 23 hours a day without resources and with the presumption, of course, that you are now guilty since you, in fact, have been convicted.
Richard in Lafayette. Good morning, Richard. You're on with Professor Bell.
Yeah, hi, Professor Bell.
Hi.
I just wanted to expand on what you had said, because there's a quite a problem, I think, in the district courts, because I have seen things where judges do things that, if they were not judges, they'd be criminals, and yet they operate with total impunity, and there is no source, there's no method to stop these guys from doing that other than expensive appeals, which in most cases lets them off the hook.
Well, you certainly do have the right to file a complaint with the Judicial Commission if a judge acts inappropriately or improperly. But what I can affirm for you is that many of these complaints actually don't materialize in any findings. However, when complaints are made against people who are not lawyers, like Justice of the Peace, you will find that they are actually held accountable for misconduct. We had a case just last year in 2011, the case of Justice of the Peace Roger Adams, who signed a divorce divorce judgment when he lacked jurisdiction, and the Supreme Court says that is absolutely misconduct and he should be punished. He's, by the way, a non-lawyer who says, I just made a mistake. But in many of these cases of lawyers and judges who are certainly groomed and versed in law make mistakes, and as you point out, they are not held accountable simply because as the public, we have to embrace a broader concept of what a criminal is. And many times we presume because someone is free that they are innocent, and because someone is locked up, they are guilty, and that is not the case.
Well, thank you, Professor Bell. Good to visit
thank
with you.
You.
And it'll be a good event with us Wednesday at Southern University's Law Center.
We're looking forward to it, and we hope to see the public out. And thank you very much.
Take care. Tomorrow night, the presidential candidates will debate for a second time, this one at Hofstra University. It'll be a town hall-style debate with Mitt Romney and President Obama, Governor Romney. And President Obama, according to most, did not fare well in the first debate in Denver. And as a result, the polls have tightened considerably, and three new polls out today, all national perspective. ABC News has it Obama 49, Romney 46. Politico has it Obama 49, Romney 48, and Rasmussen has it Romney 49, Obama 48. So it is a tight race, and the next 3 weeks will determine, of course, the winner of the election, and a lot will probably hinge on the debates, which sometimes make a difference in a campaign and sometimes do not, but certainly Governor Romney's performance in the first debate enabled him to make up some ground in these surveys. And the only survey that really counts, of course, is the one that's taken on November 6th. And last time around, only 57% of the American voters participated in the election when President Obama defeated Senator McCain in a landslide. It's gotten to be quite a nasty campaign. We have been somewhat inoculated from it, somewhat, because we're not a swing state. But if you watch any of the presentations that are on various television networks, you'll hear some vitriol from commentators that is over the top, and I might say on both sides. Here's Al Sharpton recently commenting about Governor Romney.
Romney keeps his taxes private. Why not do the same with state secrets? While we're on the subject of staying quiet, don't insult an entire culture. That's what he did to the Palestinians. Tip number three, think before you speak. If you don't have anything nice to say, don't say anything at all. Well, on your next trip, make sure to follow these tips. You'll do much better.
Now, Willard is Governor Romney's first name, and Al Sharpton is referring to him in that light, and some have said if you're going to do that, you should call President Obama by his name, which, of course, is Barack Hussein Obama, going against Willard Mitt Romney. Now, Governor Romney has gotten some criticism from the likes of Mr. Sharpton on MSNBC, but it probably pales in comparison to the attacks on President Obama from Fox News. And recently, as in the last week, Newt Gingrich, who ran for the presidency against Mitt Romney, was interviewed on Fox News and went into his combat mode in attacking the president of the United States.
I mean, there's some rhythm to Barack Obama that the rest of us don't understand, whether he needs large amounts of rest, whether he needs to go play basketball for a while. I don't watch ESPN.
Now, that comes across to many as a racist comment, and I think it's fairly racist, and Newt Gingrich, who has a PhD from Tulane University, ought to know better, but he obviously is going for the kidneys in this campaign, even though he is not a candidate, and Newt Gingrich was defeated by Mitt Romney. But it's going to get even more intense, I would think, in the final 3 weeks. Tomorrow on the show, Gary Hart ran for president a couple of times, almost got the Democratic nomination in 1984. He is slated to be with us, and of course we'll talk about what's going on between President Obama and Governor Romney. In studio now is a man who's savoring the moment, Roy King, the LSU band leader. who, of course, was pleased with the outcome Saturday night as LSU beat the University of South Carolina 23-21 in Tiger Stadium with more than 90,000 of Roy's closest friends. Good morning to you.
Hi, Roy Jim.
King. Well, it was a big win.
Yeah, it sure was. We had a lot of fun.
Are you going to College Station?
We're going to send a pep band to College Station, 110.
And it's a big stadium, Kyle Field, and a big game. LSU installed as a three-point favorite over the Aggies, who survived a 59-57 tussle with Louisiana Tech Saturday night. You've been at LSU for a long time, and you've been head of the Tiger Band for...
Third year.
And in those 3 years, LSU has only lost four games. That's not bad.
No, pretty good record.
This year, though, 8 home games, right?
Yes, sir.
So 8 home games, that keeps you on your toes, doesn't it?
That keeps us pretty busy in Tiger Stadium, exciting the 92,000-plus fans.
How do you change the pattern week after week and keep it fresh?
Well, in the summertime, we go through a lot of planning with the staff, and we plan all of our halftime shows and decide if we're going to visit the east side, the west side, or the student section like we did this past week for the South Carolina game. Our show took us down to the student corner, and we performed When a Man Loves a Woman to the student section.
The old Percy Sledge song,
yes,
one that has stood the test of time. Now, most of these students who were in the band weren't alive when Percy Sledge hit the charts with that song. Did they find songs that are preceding them of interest?
I think so. I think that's a timeless piece, and that's why we chose it to end the show. By the way, it was also our salute to the Louisiana Bicentennial, celebrating 200 years of Louisiana statehood.
297-5633 is your number. Roy King is the guest. He is the LSU band leader, and he has been at LSU for how long?
It's my 16th year.
16 years. 3 years now is the man who calls the shots at halftime, and it's certainly one of the big extravaganzas when the band marches into the stadium. Do you get goosebumps on Saturday night?
It's pretty exciting to see all the fans cheering and see all of their excitement as well.
Well, the band has been, as I stated going into the show, internationally recognized for its accomplishments, and this goes back to the Huey Long days, doesn't it?
Sure. Huey Long was a huge supporter of the band and took a personal interest in the band and supported the band in many, many ways and helped for the band to grow.
And one of the staples of the LSU band is something called Tigerama.
Yeah.
That time of year. So the LSU Tiger Band is available for public viewing and hearing. And Tigerama, this is 30 years?
I think it's our 32nd year, Jim, and we're back in the PMAC where I think we belong. It's going to be a 7 o'clock show in the PMAC on October the 23rd. So if you enjoy all the sights and sounds of Tiger Band in Tiger Stadium, then you'll certainly enjoy Tigerama.
So that'll be a week from tomorrow, 7 o'clock, Pete Maravich Assembly Center, Tigerama. And what kind of presentation does the band do for this event, Roy?
Well, the first half of the show is our concert bands, and they do a short performance for the first half. And then the second half, the Tiger Band comes out and performs many of the tunes that we performed on the field this year. Also, we put in a few extra added surprises.
You'll have cheerleaders there. It'll be a big show, won't it?
Yeah, it's greatly. We have great support from the athletic department for this event.
Well, the evening includes performances by the LSU Wind Ensemble, the Symphonic Winds, and the Golden Band from Tigerland, featuring the Golden Girls and the Color Guard, as well as the LSU cheerleaders. And it is something that has become a big part of campus. Roy King says 32 years for Tigerama, so it's something that people who love music, love LSU, will find interesting a week from tomorrow night, 7 p.m. at the Pete Maravich Assembly Center, October 23rd. That's an off week for the Tigers. They'll be getting ready for Alabama on November 3rd. That's a big game.
That's a huge game.
Be even bigger if LSU wins Saturday at Texas A&M, but obviously the Alabama game has taken a life of its own.
It sure has, and this one will be no. This one will also live up to that expectation as well.
And Roy, you were at LSU when Nick Saban was the coach. LSU was beating Alabama on a regular basis. He's not as loved now as he once was in these parts.
No, he's not. He's an opposing coach now, and we have that. We certainly have that divide in my household as well.
Well, Frank Wicks was head of the band for how long?
For 33 years.
33 years.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, and you've succeeded a legend.
Yes, sir, and he was my teacher for both of my degrees at LSU, and we keep in touch constantly.
That's what I was going to ask you. You're an LSU graduate. You grew up with this stuff. It must be heady stuff for you to be where you are.
Yeah, it's a great honor to be standing in front of the students in the Tiger Band. I sort of grew up in the Tiger Band, if you will, and I met my wife in the Tiger Band. And this is a special year for me as well because my daughter this year is a freshman in the Tiger Band.
Well, it runs in the family, and it's something that many band members I know have second, third generation of family members who are participants, and it's a competitive thing to get into that band, isn't it?
It is. Everyone in the Tiger Band re-auditions every year, it's quite competitive.
Quite competitive, and you're proud of what the band does, and it is part of the culture, and the biggest cheers of the night are usually associated with the band.
Yeah, it's exciting, especially Saturday night against South Carolina. That was an exciting evening. Had everyone on the edge of their seats all the way till the very end.
Now, Roger asked about the new location for the band. This is, what, 3 years now you've been in the north end zone? Is that right?
That's correct. We were moved to the north end zone. I think a lot of the fans are enjoying our new placement in the stadium. I hear constantly that the fans in the stands can hear us better.
But do you like it better?
It's okay.
You don't get as good a view there, do you?
It's not as quite a good a view as our other seats, but if the fans can hear us better, then we're happy.
Well, you're right there with the students, which I guess is appropriate. Of course, you were with the students before. You just kind of moved a little away. But how many seats are taken by the band?
We typically have 550 seats for our 325-member band.
550 seats because you're taking up space, right?
Right. A tuba player takes up a little more than one seat.
So when they count the tickets, do they count 550 or do they count 325?
I'm not sure. That's a question for Brian Broussard in the athletic office.
But you played which instrument when you were in the band?
I was in the drumline in Tiger Band.
In the drumline. And that's something that's been recognized. The drumline has how many members are there?
In the drumline, it typically somewhere between 29 and 31.
That's rather precise. What's the difference between 29 and 31?
Well, we sort of have a strict instrumentation with some of the instruments, but not with others. So,
well, it's also competitive to be an LSU cheerleader, Golden Girl, Color Guard member. How is that process? And who makes the call? Do you make the call?
Yeah, I adjudicate those auditions. We assemble a panel, and I'm just one member of the panel. And we have the Color Guard and Golden Girl auditions in April each year for the upcoming year.
And so, how many members are there?
In the Color Guard, we have 32, and in the Golden Girls, we have 18.
And how many applicants do you usually get?
Oh, it varies from year to year, but we'll have probably close to about 100 that'll show up for Golden Girl auditions.
And you have, once again, how many?
18.
18. So it's 18%. That's pretty strong competition.
Yes.
But it's a beautiful array of pageantry and music. And the LSU band is a big part of the fabric of the Old War School. And come next Tuesday night, the 23rd, 7 p.m. at the Pete Maravich Assembly Center, it's Tigerama time. Who is the MC? You know?
It's kind of a secret, and we're going to unveil that at the event.
Well, it's not me, but it used to be my mentor, Jules Demichord, and he always did a great job.
For many years, Jules
did a wonderful
job.
Thank you, Roy King.
Hey, you can get your tickets at lsutigerama.com, by the way.
Well, lsutigerama.com. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your local number outside the area. It's 877-217-5757, and you may reach us via email at Inkster Show, E-N-G-S-T-E-R, show at WRKF.org. And we have two distinguished members of our community in studio now, Nancy Jo Craig and Nikita Wilson, and they are involved with the Capital Area Corporate Recycling Council, and there's some new maneuvers by this fine organization. Nancy Jo's been with us a few times, and of course Nikita is well known for his days at Louisiana State University, where he was one of the fine players to ever play for Dale Duard Brown. Came out of Leesville High School and went on to play in the NBA with the Portland Trail Blazers. He was high second round pick, and then spent almost a decade playing professional basketball all over the United States and really all over the world for that matter. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Well, let's start a bit with you talking about Nikita. How did he get involved with your organization?
Well, the Capital Area Corporate Recycling Council is a nonprofit that recycles electronics, and I've been the executive director there for about 8 years. And we wanted to get this certification that we're going to talk about, R2, Responsible Recycling. It's a big deal. It's rigorous. It's hard to do. And I needed some help, you know. So I decided, well, I'm going to create a new position, a warehouse manager, somebody who can really help me get the materials in place and my young crew to work harder and to learn all this stuff, because it's not just you do it right, you have to learn all about it. And so I advertised the job, and it was pretty stiff competition, but he did have this really great reference, you know, that Nikita got the job on his own. The reference didn't get him the job, but Dale Brown did call and say, this is the guy you need to hire.
So. Well, Nikita looks like he could still play. It's been a few years.
Looks are deceiving.
Yeah. Yes. 25 years since you played at LSU. That's hard for us to believe, those of us who watched you. And I think your last game at LSU was that regional final against Indiana. Your shot at the buzzer went in and out, would have won it and sent you to the Final Four.
Absolutely, which was in New Orleans, of course.
Final Four was in New Orleans that year, and I think LSU might have won the national championship that year had the Tigers advanced to the Final Four, but you did not. And people, you know, you come and go at LSU, but a few make an impression that lasts for a long time. In this case, 25 years later, we're still talking about Nikita Wilson.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, Nikita is an incredible person to have on our team, and he's really created an environment there that's really changed sort of the nature of our organization. It's a pretty happy place to be. But we worked with Nikita, part of the team, over the past 9 months, getting our R2 certification. It's called Responsible Recycling. It's an international certification that is industry-driven. The EPA, multi-stakeholders put it together. And we are the only R2 certified recycler in the state. So there's no federal legislation, and there's a hodgepodge of state legislation about electronic recycling. So this is sort of a standard to make sure that people recycle correctly.
All right. 297-5633, if you'd like to join the conversation with Nancy Jo Craig, who heads the Capital Area Corporate Recycling Council. And one of her top aides is none other than Nikita Wilson. Now, the need across the U.S. for used computers, is pegged at 30 million, and yet only 200,000 are refurbished every year. Why do we have this disparity?
Well, because in the recycling industry, most recyclers pick up the equipment. They're big, giant, private privately run industries, and they take the material and it gets shredded and it goes into their end product. Only about 5% of the industry are the nonprofit refurbishers like the CACRC, and our job is to go through the equipment, and that's what Nikita's crew does. We go through the equipment, and anything that we can be reused, we reuse it. So our motto is reuse the best, recycle the rest, and a lot of people in our community need used computers. As a matter of fact, Nikita and I were looking around your office, and we see a lot of CRT monitors. You know, most people have already gone to flat screens, but we have programs for Computers for Louisiana Families, where low-income families can get a computer system for really inexpensive. And for a lot of people that are coming in, even in 2012, it's the first computer they've ever had in their home.
Nancy Jo Craig, you've been doing this how long?
8 years.
8 years. And Nikita, you've been at it for?
25 years. Well, I've actually been there about 7, 8 months, somewhere around there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And CACRC's reuse and recycling efforts are the equivalent, according to what they tout, and we believe them, energy savings of 3,350 U.S. households in a year. Greenhouse gas reduction equal to removing 2,365 passenger cars from the road each year. Solid waste generated by 380 U.S. households in a year. And we can go on and on. And so how do you encourage people to become more active in recycling?
Well, people instinctively don't want to throw their old stuff away. And, you know, electronic gadgets, if you think about all those people buying the iPhone 5, you know, it's the iPhone 5. I say I'm holding out for the iPhone 10. I hear it's going to be really great. But people have a lot of equipment stashed away, but most people think it should be recycled. And here in Baton Rouge, people are lucky because there's an easy way to recycle. All you have to do is come drop it off, and for businesses, we actually pick it up. So most people are inclined to recycle it if given the opportunity.
So if you're a business and you want to have the Capital Area Corporate Recycling Council come to your door,
you call us up. If you're in Baton Rouge, if you have 30 pieces, we'll pick it up. If you're out of the city, you have to have 50 pieces or more, mm-hmm. but we'll arrange to do that. And
am I going to get Nikita to come? Will he come to the door?
Well, that's not Nikita's job, but for a special invitation, we could arrange that, yeah.
He mm-hmm. signs autographs, too.
Right.
Jim downtown. Question, Jim, you're on with Nikita Wilson. Jim?
Nikita, I was just wondering what you've been up to the last 25 years since LSU, and what kind of things have you been doing?
Well, everything that I've been doing has been positive. So been involved with working with young people throughout the community. And the fortunate thing for me, it's kind of like how Coach Brown came all the way to Leesville, wherever that is, to get me. I think Nancy kind of did the same. And it's been a great opportunity for me being involved in CACRC, nonprofit, something good for the community and actually good for the earth. Completely unaware of it before that time, but now there's a serious awareness of it and the importance of doing that. But just been involved in young people and basically teaching things that I didn't know when I was that age, and you know, and been able to display and pass that information on.
Mm-hmm. Now you say Coach Brown went and found you in Leesville. A lot of other people were knocking on your door in Leesville, weren't they?
Absolutely. And then I'd say Coach Brown came to Leesville because we didn't have an airport, so I don't know where he landed at. But it was some highway that he landed and came out there. Matter of fact, that's probably mm-hmm. was the first time I ever flew on a plane, so that was quite scary coming off of highway on an airplane.
Mm-hmm. Who else recruited you of note?
Of course, you had Joby Hall at Kentucky and Denny Crum at Louisville and Nolan Richardson at Tulsa at that particular time and Ray Meyer. So, you know, I was fortunate to get quite a few coaches, you know, prominent teams that thought I had some skills And I remember Coach Brown having a conversation with Coach Brown. He said the first time he saw me on the basketball floor, he was a bit nervous because I look a bit frail. So, but he didn't see my elbows. So, you know, I've been fortunate, you know, not to necessarily have all of the twos, but I gained a little bit of knowledge and strategy during those times. And I've been able to utilize some of those things that I did on the basketball court in my regular life, I guess.
Dave near LSU. Dave, you're on the air with Nancy Joe and Nikita. Hi, Dave.
Good morning. In terms of donating a computer, what do you do to ensure that, in terms of privacy issues, like...
Okay.
Well, that's... I mean, the Capital Area Corporate Recycling Council always had a data security procedure, but with R2, you know, now it's third-party certified. So data security is of utmost importance of when the computers come in. If a hard drive comes in on its own, it gets locked up. At every stage of the process, your data is secured. Because we do reuse, if a hard drive can be reused, it is reused, but it's a race to a top national standard in a locked cage. So data security is one of our top priorities. Because we have this third party certification, they went through all of our procedures up and down, and your data is very secure.
Enrique on airline. Enrique, you're on the air with Nancy Joe Craig and Nikita Wilson.
How are you?
Fine.
Yeah, I actually worked for the CACRC, and I felt like my experience with that company was a nice experience, but I felt like things were going on in the background that I didn't really like.
All right, I think that's a topic for another time, not on this program, but Nancy's smiling, and... perhaps it was before her tenure, but we wish you well, Enrique. Now, I'm told that reusing just one computer with a CRT monitor saves 30 pounds of hazardous waste. Is that right?
Well, that's right. And, you know, but what we try when you think about a CRT monitor, it has lead in the glass, circuit boards, and batteries and LCD monitors. There's mercury. But we try to think of it not as waste. We really try to think of it as there's valuable resource in all of that. And the electronic waste stream is going to probably double in the next 5 years. And if it goes to the landfills, that's a problem for the entire planet. But it doesn't need to. These are green jobs that can be built around this stream of material, and most of this stuff is just a valuable resource. There's copper and gold and everything that needs to be recovered.
Now, your organization, Nancy Joe, has been involved in some civic activities as well. I know you were involved in hurricane relief, for example.
That's right. After Hurricane Katrina, we had one of the largest relief efforts ever. We asked the entire country to send us computers and monitors, and we were able to refurbish and donate, close to 3,500 computers to individuals and schools and nonprofits. And people don't think about, well, why a computer? But, you know, in this day and age, if you're trying to get back on your feet, you need technology.
Mm-hmm. Well, for those who'd like to come by and drop something off,
We're at 1400 Main Street. We've moved, and for people who are from Baton Rouge, that's right before the railroad tracks, before you get to the old Gotchaw's building. We're open between 8:30 and 4 for drop-offs, and you'll see Nikita and his crew, the famous Nikita Wilson, will be there. So if you want to see him, and I guess this week only, he's giving autographs. So.
You can't miss him, all 6'8" of him. And you played, what, about 200 pounds?
Yeah, 200. At my heaviest time, I tipped it at 205.
205.
Yes.
And you don't look like you've gained a whole lot of weight since.
No, I stay pretty active.
Yeah. So what are you now, 220?
230, somewhere in that, only because the weight is in other places. So
he looks like he could still play, and I'm sure he could lift a computer if he had to.
Absolutely.
But, yeah. And what a personality for Nikita Franciscus Wilson. You yes. came here with Mike Mallett, didn't you?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Who's still at LSU.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And you just missed, well, you actually were part of the 86 Final Four team, mm-hmm. but you were not eligible then.
Absolutely.
That must have been a disappointment.
Oh, definitely was. And, you know, of course it was tough during those times. And as I share that story with lots of young people, and so they'll understand the importance. My problem didn't start when I was at LSU. It started when in elementary school, not really completely understanding, you know, the value of the whole educational piece. And then sports came along. So sometimes you tend to get off track or not necessarily stay in the right direction. But, you know, that's the whole thing. The way I operate now, you know, it's not a Final Four that I'm pushing for, but it's the R2 certification that we were pushing for, as well as with all of the young people that we have at the, you know, at the place. We want those young people mm-hmm. to understand the importance of being a professional, the importance of being able to communicate, and those are all the things that Coach Brown provided for us, you know, back in those days there. So my job is basically just to pass on that ideal of young people growing and developing, and with the hopes that they'll be responsible recyclers in the future and also have an opportunity to do great things.
Final question from a listener. Your thoughts about Johnny Jones being the new coach at LSU?
Well, I with Johnny Jones back, of course, that brings a personal, you know, personal thing back to us. It's really one of our own. I just think the sky's the limit with Johnny Jones. I got a chance to run into him over on the LSU campus, and it was great seeing him because it's still the same Johnny Jones that was in the dormitory back in the days with all of us. So, you know, I wish him success, and I think he'll have enormous success, and I'm just really looking forward to seeing him with Louisiana product, because during my time we had Louisiana product, and see him bring home a championship.
Well, thank you, Nikita. Thank you, Nancy Joe. And
well,
for those who'd like to contact you, what's the best way to find you other than dropping by at 1400 Main?
Well, 379-3577 is our phone number.
225-379-3577. Thank you, Nancy
Thanks.
Joe Craig. Thank you, Nikita
thank
Wilson.
You.
We'll be back tomorrow. Until then, for Kevin Gallagher, have a great day and stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.